This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 24th of June, 2016. Well, hello, and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for John Parker, who is on holiday. Our editors this week are Sue Frayn, Anne Brew, and Jane Thomas. And I'm joined this week by three readers, Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Andrew Smith.
Hello.
Now this is, we're recording this on Friday the 24th of June, and this is quite a traumatic day really, isn't it? Because this is the day after the referendum vote, and we now know that the UK has voted to leave the European Union, and that our Prime Minister is going to step down in October. So it seems a little bizarre to be reading items of local news, which seem somehow rather less important, but of course are still of great interest to us all. Well, we start off with two or three of our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recording that you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And just to remind you, they can use your buttons on the top of the box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And there you can either listen to it off the website, or you can download the recording to listen to it later. Or you can even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. So the possibilities, as you can see, are endless. Our main headlines this week are Chance to Play Out in the Roads, Lawyer Avoids Jail, and Hospital Tour Appointment. So, Margot, what's all this about you playing it out in the street?
Well, it's a chance to do what I did as a child. Anyway, Chance to Play Out in the Roads. A Winchester road is turning back the clock for its children. St Catherine's Road in Highcliffe is believed to be the first in Hampshire taking part in the Play Street initiative. Local parents have got permission to temporarily close the road to allow children to play outside their homes in the road without fear of being knocked down by traffic. For any person over 50 years of age, playing in the street was a given before near universal car ownership made it too dangerous. Organiser Helen Fisher, a mother of two, said, "We think we are the first in Hampshire, as far as we know. It was started in Bristol by a group of mums. We held our first one in April, and we have about 25 children at each session. It is up to them what they do. At the last one, a resident had a load of empty boxes after some deliveries, and the children made dens. When I was growing up, I was always playing out on the street with friends. It's just part of what we did. I wanted my children to experience this, even just once a month, and to enable adults and children to socialise together, be active, and have some fun." We had such an overwhelming response after the first Play Street. People were stopping me in the street, telling me how great they thought it was, and my children keep asking when the next one is. It's a good way of getting the community out. I have a neighbour, a widow, and she doesn't get out very much. She came out and ended up playing tennis with a little boy. She said how great it was to get out of the house. There is something about children being able to play outside their houses. You get a sense of community ownership. People come out of their front doors and mix. Miss Fisher arranged with the City Council for a section of St Catherine's Road to be closed off last Friday between 3:30 p.m. and 5 p.m. Cars remained parked by the road and the children played around them. She said there had been no issues with non-parents after a meeting was held and concerns aired and people reassured. Miss Fisher said she is happy to offer advice for other local roads that may want to do in the scheme. It's easy to do, she said. Project co-founder Alice Ferguson said, as the evenings get lighter, we all look forward to spending longer outdoors, and children in particular gain so much from being able to play freely outside. The problems of overweight, sedentary children are growing in our society, and giving them the chance for regular, semi-supervised outdoor play in their own street is one powerful solution to this. In addition, children need to feel part of the place they are living in and connected to those around them. Playing out gives them all this chance and brings together neighbours of all ages. And this is accompanied by many colour photographs of the children happily playing, skipping, scooting, and just generally dancing around.
Thank you, Margot. I think we ought to congratulate Margot for successfully battling her piece of paper there. Perhaps I ought to explain, in case your listeners can hear in the background, it's a very warm day today, and we have got the fan running, and Margot had to battle with the paper nearly being blown away. So thank you, Margot. Now, John, the next item is about you avoiding jail, is that correct?
Just. Lawyer avoids jail. A Winchester property lawyer who fired off letters to relatives of her husband's mistress describing the woman's, quote, bizarre sexual practices, unquote, has avoided jail. Catherine Simpson, 49, revealed details of antics involving her husband Jonathan, 48, and his lover to her brother, sister-in-law, and her former partner. Mrs. Simpson described her as a, quote, chavvy woman from Southampton, unquote, before sending the letters. She was handed a curfew and a restraining order at Southwark Crown Court on Tuesday. The Simpsons, both of Clifton Terrace, were each found guilty last Friday of a single count of stalking involving serious alarm or distress. Mrs. Simpson was handed a 12-month restraining order and a curfew for a year, which means she must stay at home between 10 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. on weekdays and between 7 p.m. and 6 a.m. at weekends. Mr. Simpson was cleared of acting in breach of a restraining order and is set to be sentenced on June the 29th. The curfew is set to be lifted between August the 12th and the 31st so that Mrs. Simpson can take her children on holiday. Judge Alistair McCreath said, I have no doubt at all that the discovery of that affair was at the very least distressing for you, if not rather worse. The judge added that there must have been, quote, a time of real unhappiness, unquote, during the affair. He also referred to comments made by Mrs. Simpson in which she dubbed the other woman a chav and her boyfriend a thug who should be kept in a cage. At a time of high emotion and in circumstances where you were in your own home being recorded without the courtesy of being told that you were being recorded, you allowed yourself to speak in a way that you would not normally speak, I think, of anybody, said the judge. What happened thereafter, I have no difficulty at all in accepting you did to offer support to your husband. Sentencing Mrs. Simpson, the judge added that he did not want to unfairly punish her innocent children who have suffered by what happened. The person to be punished, he said, must be the person who committed the crime, not others. The proportionate response to that balance, it seems to me, is to deprive you of your liberty to an extent which is designed to be significant, but not of a kind that will have an adverse and disproportionate impact on your children. Mr. Simpson and the other woman, who cannot be named for legal reasons, had an 18-month affair which left him going back to, quote, like a crack addict, unquote. His wife claimed she contracted herpes as a byproduct of the other woman's bizarre sexual practices before going on to rant about her to a covert police camera. Mrs. Simpson was found guilty of harassing the woman by sending three letters to those close to her which referenced her and her child's well-being. Mrs. Simpson explicitly wrote that she wanted the woman to drop the restraining order and that she stay out of Winchester. David Sapieca, prosecuting, summarised a victim impact statement. He said, quote, "She wants to get on with her life without fear or worry. She feels violated, highly embarrassed and degraded, in constant worry and distress. It has been a traumatic experience." Unquote.
Thank you, John. Andrew, you've got an item about a tour of our hospital.
It is. Probably the largest admittance in one day, I think, at Winchester Hospital.
Oh.
So, hospital tour appointment. It is not often that Royal Hampshire County Hospital throws its doors open for the public to discover its secrets. However, hundreds got a real insight into how the hospital in Romsey Road operates at an open day. Ex-Saints left back Dan Harding, who currently plays for Eastleigh Football Club, was among more than 200 people who enjoyed the event. They ventured into the hospital's past and looked at artifacts, including a lamp used by Florence Nightingale. They also got a chance to get hands-on and carry out keyhole surgery on a dummy tour. I'm sorry, on a dummy. Tour the operating theatre and meet medical experts. People also met the hospital's pets as therapy dogs, took pictures with the motorbike used to transport blood, and learned the basics of emergency first aid. Mary Edwards, Trust Chief Executive, said, "Our open day at Royal Hampshire County Hospital was a great success. Everyone I spoke to said they found it fascinating and really enjoyed the opportunity to go behind the scenes of a working hospital. I would like to thank Dan Harding for speaking so highly of our services and for officially opening the event. Most of all, I'd like to thank all of the visitors and staff and their families for coming along to find out more about our services. It is fantastic to have the support of the community and to see how interested local people are in what we do." And again, there are lots of lovely, colourful photos. The big group photo of dogs and children and adults standing outside the hospital.
Thank you, Andrew. Now, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with death notices, then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, Joanna Lewis's column, Belgarum, what's on, sport, and then lighting up times. So the death notices. Belle Muriel Elizabeth Bell, peacefully, 10th of June, aged 84.
Bichard, Philip Mead Bichard, peacefully, 17th of June, aged 94.
Clancy, Pat Clancy, peacefully aged 70.
Cole, Albert Percival Cole, BEM, known as Percy, peacefully 4th of June, aged 93.
Frogley, Kathleen Frogley, known as Kath, peacefully 11th of June, aged 89.
Harrison, Ian Peter Harrison, on the 13th of June, after a short illness.
Ives, Florence, Peggy Ives, peacefully, 14th of June.
McRae, Hamish McRae, peacefully, 11th of June, after a short illness.
Matthews, Susan Eleanor Matthews, 13th of June, aged 77.
Now, I wish to read a contributed article about one of our citizens. Nancy Harper, a much-loved, near-lifelong Wintonian, has died, aged 83. Many people will remember her as the owner of a nursery school in St. Cross, for her involvement with guiding and for worship at the Hospital of St. Cross. She was born in Chiswick and lived there until her father retired from the London police and moved to Clausentum Road in St. Cross. This remained Nancy's home until her death, and where she had cared for her parents and two aunts at separate times with love and dedication until their deaths. In 1957, her friends helped her set up the nursery school in St. Cross, which became very popular with parents and children. A typical example of its success was taking our daughter to enroll in Nancy's nursery, for this very clinging child to sit tightly on mother's lap and refuse to speak until Nancy, in her own turn, knelt down to the child's level, and in her usual gentle voice introduced herself. "I am Miss Harper, and you must be Miss X. I would love to show you round our nursery." And without another word, our child put her hand into Nancy's and never looked back, and adores her to this day, as do her children and many other children and their children. Girl guiding was another of Nancy's hobbies. She took over St. Cross Brownie Pack in 1957. It was here that the close and lasting friendship with Chris Tulloch began. They had many an adventure together, especially through guiding and taking the children on pack holidays. Her other deep and most important love was her faith and her church. She was a loyal and very active member of St. Cross Church and attended regularly until Christmas 2015, when she found it all too difficult. Diabetes, the family inheritance, had taken its toll with its added complications. Thankfully, she was able to continue living at home with help from her neighbours and her friends and her loyal neighbour, Sue, until her hospitalisation. Nancy was a governor of St. Faith School, but was not averse to filling in as dinner lady when the need arose. She was a board member of St. Faith's Parish Hall for many years and organised the refreshments at St. Cross Fete. She was also a volunteer in the 100 Men's Hall Refreshment Hall at St. Cross, besides being a good Samaritan to many elderly residents of St. Cross. In 1995, she was awarded the MBE for services to children's education. As a great royalist, she was thrilled to be decorated by the Queen herself. She was no less proud to be given the Hampshire Rose Award for special services to guiding. Both these medals adorned her coffin, which was draped with the World Guide flag, a fitting tribute to her 75 years with the Girl Guides.
Thank you, Margot. We now move on to Christian comment, written this week by the Reverend Graham Balkett, who's the Rector of Upper Itchen Benefice and the Area Dean of Alresford. Margot, we're working very hard at the moment.
It's so a pleasure. Yeah,
thank you. Please tell us what he's writing about this week.
Well, he entitles his Christian comment as "Seeking the Joy of God in All People." When I was in training for ordination, the principal of my college, whom, if I am honest, I rarely listened to, but on occasion had to, would be with captured audience in a rather disparaging manner proclaim that we, when ordained, would inevitably become chaplains to congregations. This, it was implied, was a bad thing, and furthermore, and rather less catchy, that we were to, quote, take great care in our spiritual life, as it is highly likely we would struggle to discern God in our everyday work, end of quote. I did wonder why he was a principal of a theological college. It would be hard to find God in the machine that is parochial ministry, he informed us. This view, I assumed, was born of decades of disappointment and cynicism of ministry in the Church of England. He was a cheery fellow, whom I think was made the Bishop of Hackle Dharma just after I left, although that may not be right. Whilst I do think he rather overplayed the grumpy old man card, I reflect his assertion may have had a modicum of merit. I have discovered myself that it is indeed far too easy to be diverted and distracted from the purpose of the aspiration of one's ministry, to come alongside people, to meet them where they are, and without motive or caveat, love them regardless of circumstance or station, seeking the joy of God in all people, wherever and whenever possible. This is a great privilege, after being a servant of the most worthy Lord, Jesus. That said, and following that proclamation of high ideals, I am guilty of letting the parochial stuff dampen my spiritual bounciness. I have discovered that as hard as I try, I get incredibly distracted by the sharpening of pencils, filing documents, answering of email stuff that gets in the way of the, quote, grace and wonder of God bit I am supposed to do. This is obviously not what a sensitive religious type like me wants to do, but it seems impossible to avoid. Although, all that said, something truly amazing happened today whilst I was chaplain at the cathedral. I met two people there, a married couple. They had travelled to Winchester from the Midlands. They were full of sadness and despair and loss. They had left home, not knowing where they were going. They found themselves in Winchester and then in the cathedral. The details of what drove them there are not important, but their emotion was heavy, the weight of the situation almost unbearable. We prayed for an hour. They told me it was the only relief they had felt in months, the only comfort they had taken as long as they could remember. They knew God was with them in that little side chapel. He had put his hands on their shoulder, and they knew they were loved, and that everything was going to be all right. They left the cathedral with their life different, reshaped. God's unconditional love had done something really powerful. It had given them hope. So writes the Reverend Graham Barkett, Rector of Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Oresford.
Thank you, Margot. Well, we now come to letters to the editor. And there is no doubt about the overriding concerns of our letter writers this week, the referendum on Britain possibly leaving the European Union. And the first five of these concern pensioners and the EU debate. Now, as I said earlier, it's all over now and we know the result. Although I did notice that in the Winchester area, which is the area mainly covered by the Hampshire Chronicle, the residents principally voted to remain. Perhaps we will explore this in our letters. And John, could you start, please? Oh, I beg your pardon. Margot, could you start? We are working you hard today.
Well, I accept my lot with pleasure. This one is from Mike Sherwood, and he calls it idiotic suggestion. Sir, in his offensive letter in the Chronicle of June the 16th, Tom Smith suggests that all pensioners supporting Brexit should have deductions made from their benefits for their, quote, stupidity, unquote, should the economy suffer subsequently. I would use the same word, probably preceded by an unprintable adjective, to describe his suggestion. Mike Sherwood, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
This one, called Insulting Comment, is a letter from Peter Hargreaves. Sir, I'm surprised that you allowed your letters columns to be used by Tom Smith to insult Winchester's pensioners. His pensioners supporting Brexit in their dotage remark was actually meaning dotty pensioners and is deeply insulting. He must be grossly ignorant and possibly semi-illiterate to believe older people are incapable of making rational judgments. It could be argued that it's due to their long experience and dealing with the many horrific problems that now allow him and his family to grow up in a safe as well as secure environment. It's the country's seniors who made it possible. I'm in my dotage and will be voting Brexit. His suggestions what punishment should be doled out to pensioners like me who voted to rescue Britain from an incompetent, totally corrupt and undemocratic European state seemed to reflect an attitude towards old people that was experienced in Nazi Germany prior to Second World War. On behalf of Winchester's pensioners, I hope that when the referendum result is announced, Mr. Smith will get the black eye he richly deserves. That's from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And from Tim Finn Kelsey of Stoke Charity, Anti-Democracy. Sir, I'm a pensioner supporting Brexit, but not yet in my dotage. I was astounded to read Tom Smith's letter, Chronicle June 16, suggesting that I, along with others who vote Leave, should be put on a list to have our, quote, pensions and benefits suitably deducted for their stupidity, unquote. Mr. Smith obviously does not believe in the accountable democracy for which I will be voting.
And this is from Mike Biden, entitled Reflection. Sir, those of us approaching, or who have even passed our allotted 80 years and 10, would do well to reflect before casting our votes. We are the most fortunate and privileged generation ever to have lived. We have never known war, famine, or pestilence. We have enjoyed lives continuously enhanced by ever-growing prosperity. We created the Western world as we know it today. We and our children take it for granted. It didn't just happen. The post-war settlement had many parts, from the founding of the United Nations, the Imperial Monetary Fund, and the Marshall Plan. But its two pillars have been NATO and the EU. Others were not so fortunate, those who followed the path of communism in Soviet Russia or China suffered terribly. Most of those born in Africa, Asia, and Latin America have struggled for their whole lives and suffer in their old age. Do we really wish to deny our grandchildren the same opportunity that we have had? We had our vote in 1975. We should not now use our votes to stop them having their chance. Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, Winchester.
Alan Whittle says, we're okay in the EU. Sir, supporters of Brexit seem to be promising us pensioners that by coming out of the EU, we can return to a utopian existence of yesteryear. Really? My memory is of 3-day weeks, financial turndowns, devaluation of the pound, and a mortgage rate that peaked at 15.5%. My memory also reminds me of mounted police acting like the military, charging students demonstrating in London, and miners on strike in Yorkshire. Added to that, we now have Michael Gove and Ian Duncan Smith trying to bribe us with hints that they might be able to reduce VAT on fuel and reduce heating bills by maybe £60 a week. Is this the same Mr. Duncan Smith who wanted to abolish the £200 pensioners' heating allowance a short while ago? I am by no means wealthy, but reasonably comfortable, and I suggest that most of us are doing okay within the EU. Let's not risk chucking it away to satisfy a few politicians who are really interested only in satisfying their own ambitions. So writes Alan Whittle, Southview Road, Winchester.
From Nigel Richards. Our role in Europe. Sir, after all the recent hype about migration and the economy, it is worth taking a wider view of Britain's role in Europe. Here is an item from a recent continental newspaper describing Britain's contribution. Quote, to stand alone amongst enemies in 1940 was heroic. To stand alone amongst friends in 2016 would be absurd. Unquote. The message to those considering voting for Britain to leave the European Union on June the 23rd is simple. Be very careful what you wish for. And that's from Nigel Richards, Park Road, Winchester.
Lord Chigi writes, vote should be in. Sir, the economic case for leaving the EU presented by the Brexiteers makes much of an assumption that the UK would then be free to trade at will with the world, unshackled from EU regulations. The most cursory examination confirms this to be blatantly false. Just as the EU is the largest trading partner with the rapidly expanding markets of Africa, the same applies to India and China. Both have made clear their reluctance to see Britain leave the EU. both are on record as being far more interested in negotiating comprehensive trade deals with the EU than with just one of its 28 members, even if it is the second largest economy in Europe. President Xi, on his recent visit to the UK, said, quote, China hopes to see a prosperous Europe and a united EU, with Britain as an important member playing an even more positive and constructive role in the development of the China to EU ties, unquote. Asia's leaders have, without exception, encouraged the UK not to withdraw from the EU. In India, where the UK is seen as their entry point to the EU market, there is widespread anxiety that leaving would create considerable uncertainty in the economy and have an adverse impact on investment. Across the Commonwealth, which Brexiteers cling on to like an economic get-out-of-jail card, it's a similar story. The Prime Ministers of both Australia and New Zealand support British membership of the EU, welcoming our strong role in Europe. The considered opinion of our friends, allies, and trading partners in Asia and the rest of the world is all but unanimous. The vote should be for in. But if it's for out, the negative effects will be felt all round the globe. Lord Chidgey, Parliamentary Spokesman for International Trade and Development, Jacqueline's Lane, Alsford.
Richard Stobart advises, stop the empire. Sir, this referendum is our last chance to stop the European empire from making us build over all the downs and meadows of this part of Hampshire to cope with the consequences of the free movement of population. Not just Fareham, Gosport and Eastleigh, but Rumsey, Winchester and Bishop's Waltham too, with all their villages, will be part of the great Solent sprawl. Mile after mile of housing estates, workshops and warehouses will be created to relieve the unemployed of Eastern and Southern Europe, although common sense says that they should be helped in their own countries, which is surely where they would prefer to live. In fact, the European Empire is the only free trade area in the world that is entrusted, or rather encrusted, with unnecessary conditions such as uncontrolled migration, vast subsidies or military ambitions to create an army to rival NATO. There must be a better way for trading nations to find prosperity. Even the supporters of the European dream are not proud of it, I suspect. I have yet to see one of them waving its flag. That's from Richard Stobart, Bournefields, Twyford.
And R. Thompson discusses the free trade myth. Sir, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised by your correspondent Graham Hill, letters June the 9th, that he knows so little history he repeats the myth that in 1975 we were told we were only joining a free trade area. Clearly he didn't read the government's pamphlet called Britain's New Deal in Europe. It gave five reasons why the Treaty of Rome was signed and why the UK should vote to remain in the common market. These were: to bring together the peoples of Europe, to raise living standards and improve working conditions, to promote growth and world trade, to help the poorer regions of Europe and the rest of the world, to help maintain peace and freedom. These were ambitious and progressive political objectives for an entity whose only rationale was allegedly the promotion of free trade. Yet we only ever voted to join a common market is another myth that anti-Europeans over the last three decades have propagated with so much success it is widely believed. It's one of those lies that has become embedded in the minds of those who are quite content to let ignorance and prejudice stand in the way of truth. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, but not their own lies. From R. Thompson, St. Faith's Close, Gosport.
P. Windsor Aubrey entitles his letter, Staying is a Risk. Sir, with June 23 looming, one might do well to consider dispassionately whether the EU is now a failing institution. The debate has almost entirely ignored whether it will exist in 10 to 20 years. It is afflicted now by four major crises, which it seems woefully incapable of resolving. Number one is the migrant crisis, with thousands pouring through the open borders of the Schengen area with seemingly minimal health checks. Number two, the security crisis. Europol head Bob Rainwhite admits that up to 5,000 ISIS fighters are back in Europe. As ISIS is militarily being pushed back, it is increasing its terrorist attacks on the West. Regrettably, the EU is a source of weakness, not strength. Number three, the financial crisis. The next bailout for Greece is already under discussion. The Commission's solution is the Five Presidents Report, which advocates a common finance ministry, permanent fiscal transfers between rich and poor, and jointly guaranteed euro bonds. This would never be accepted by Germany, and stalemate will prevail. Number four, the unemployment crisis. A Sisitas study, I'm not quite sure what that means, in July 2015, revealed the EU countries have had much higher unemployment than comparable Western countries. Currently, youth unemployment is 24% in France, 37% in Italy, 45% in Spain, and 52% in Greece. The EU has failed a whole generation, and surely we wouldn't wish to condemn our children to such a fate. The EU disdains democracy, which is why across Europe its support is declining. Jean-Claude Juncker has stated there can be no democratic decision against the EU treaties. Finally, fear tactics used by the government at all are emulating the pattern which, when Norway had a referendum, the political elite there purported that the currency would be devalued, 150,000 jobs be lost, and the cost of food increase. A year afterwards, Norway had cheaper food, 10,000 more jobs, and the krone increased. Staying in does not guarantee safety any more than out. In very many ways, it is more dangerous. It's for you to decide. P. Windsor Aubrey, Orient Drive, Hairstock, Winchester.
Now, if you're still awake after those those 10 letters about the EU, you might like to listen to this one, which is not about the EU. It's from Maurice K. Charrett, who says, "Traffic spoils city." Sir, recent issues of the Chronicle have contained several encouraging letters and an editorial condemning any return to the outdated 1970s and 1980s policies which gave the car priority. In the late 1980s, Winchester City and Hampshire County Councils published the Winchester Movement and Access Plan. This clearly stated that something had to be done about congestion and pollution to improve the quality of life in Winchester, and that the car had to adapt to Winchester, not Winchester to the car. Nearly 30 years later, apart from the introduction of Park and Ride, nothing appears to have been done. Appalling congestion and serious health implications created by an illegal level of pollution seriously damage Winchester's attractiveness and spoil what is otherwise a wonderful city. To try to avoid the worst congestion, pollution and health risks, it is desirable not to walk in St George's Street, North Walls, Jury Street, City Road, among others. But that is, of course, impossible. Several years ago, the local authorities threw away an ideal opportunity to exclude vehicles from the square between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. From observation and the comments of many motorists, it is evident that quite a lot of drivers still regard the square as a shortcut. There is strong proof that other towns and cities which have adopted measures to reduce traffic have benefited from an increase in retail trade. The City Council's threat to increase short-term parking in the city centre is totally illogical and is a complete reversal of policies designed to make Winchester a more pleasant, safer and healthier city. How much longer do Winchester citizens and visitors have to wait for the city and county councils to take urgent and positive action to make the city a place where pedestrians have priority and do not have to fear damage to their health from excessive traffic pollution? And that strong letter is from Maurice K. Charrett, Hampton Lane, Winchester.
And here's a viewpoint from Andy Smith from Take Down Meads, Winchester, called Classic NIMBYism. Sir, I have just returned home after another frustrating trip into Winchester. No spaces in Tower Street car park. No surprises there. So, 10 minutes driving around before I was lucky enough to get one on the Broadway. I only needed to be downtown for 15 minutes. Looking at your letters page, it is all too apparent that those correspondents, Chris Gillam, Kate McIntosh, etc., supporting the current lack of car parking, simply do not need them. It's easy to be dismissive when you are only a 5-minute walk from all you need. But this is classic NIMBYism. I live in the centre of town. I don't need car parks. I can't understand why anyone else needs them. Therefore, we shouldn't have them. Of course, there are lessons we can learn from other cities in minimising pollution, improving public transport, and making Winchester a great place to live. But successful cities put these measures in place before they restrict cars and parking, not the other way around. And that's from Andy Smith in Winchester.
Andrew Nichols entitles his letter, Look After Birds. Sir, my partner and I recently spent a pleasant couple of days in New Alsford with friends of ours who have lived in the town for some time. What a lovely, scenic and friendly place Alsford is. A gem of a town in the heart of the delightful Chalk Downs. But we were disappointed, though, to see obvious destruction of house martin nests on several houses with overhanging eaves. House martins are beautiful migratory birds, which depend on friendly owners allowing them to build their dome-shaped mud nests under overhangs on our buildings. A big thank you, of course, to those people who have allowed these insect-eating birds to coexist with them, and a plea to those who have destroyed nests to please leave them alone in future, as their numbers are in steep decline. Our Alsford friends have also noticed a marked decrease in swift numbers over the town. These aerial acrobats are also under threat, as they require nest sites under old pan tiles or in crevices high up in buildings. Naturally, new roofs do not provide any spaces for these birds, and so they are also in decline. Nest boxes can be erected, and for those re-roofing old buildings, please consider adding a nest box or two somewhere, or these beautiful birds will also disappear from our skies. Andrew Nichols, Broomhalls Road, Sisters Creek, Tasmania, Australia.
Phil Yates writes about his court memories. Sir, Belgarham's memories of reporting trials at the old assizes in the Great Hall, Chronicle, June the 16th, reminded me of the times as a junior law clerk. I escorted clients from the solicitor's offices, where I was employed, to the law courts to meet their barrister, possibly for the first and only time. Not only was there no press room, there was no consultation room where the barrister and client were able to discuss the case in question before appearing before the judge. These so-called consultations had to take place in a narrow corridor which separated the two courts. No privacy at all. The courts were always draughty and very cold in the winter. Barristers and judges were always complaining, and so did we lesser mortals. Major trials were heard in Number 1 Court, to the right as you enter the main door. The judge's bench, still visible in the great hall, was positioned under the round table. Minor cases were heard in number 2 court, to the left of the main door, with this narrow corridor in between. The wooden trap door where prisoners were brought up from the basement is still visible in the stone floor. The Westgate Hotel and Tavern, its original name, on the corner of Rumsey Road and Upper High Street, where reporters gathered, was formerly a chemist's and druggist's before converting into the Westgate Hotel in 1984. The name changed to the Westgate Inn in 2005 to comply with EU regulations. On a recent inspection, I saw the refurbished pub is now simply called the Westgate. And congratulations to the new owners on a marvellous job. That's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And Michael Coker Davies says, keep area clean. Sir, Winchester City Council should obviously be proud of its green credentials. The want to leave nature to run its own course, to allow plants to flourish in their natural surroundings, is admirable. Regrettably, the large group of American tourists that strayed off-grid into Upper Brook Street may have taken the view that the random mix of KFC litter, unchecked weeds, and broken paving was more scruffy and shameful than tolerant to nature. Get a grip, Winchester City Council. If you can't get the simple day-to-day cleanliness of the city right, what chance of bigger issues? Please note, block drain or smashed window of the month may follow. And that's from Michael Coker Davies, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
And D. Firebrace gives his thanks to the NHS. Sir, I was glad to read that Peter Lee has had such good experiences in the A&E department of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. It is a cruel act of fate that so soon after retiring from Grattan Surgery, where he worked tirelessly as a conscientious, caring GP for over 30 years, that he should become unwell and be on the other end of the stethoscope. If it weren't for the much criticised NHS and his courage and determination, he would not still be around to make the most of his well-earned retirement. D. Firebrace, Pipersfield, Sutton Scotney.
This letter is entitled Grateful for Help, and it's from Anne Gosling from Winchester Samaritans. Sir, thank you, Winchester, for your support of our street collection on Saturday, June the 11th by Winchester and District Samaritans. We raised £642.19 when we were in the high street with our collecting boxes. Once again, we are grateful for the continuing support of Winchester residents and visitors. All Samaritan volunteers are unpaid, and these funds raised will be used to support our callers by telephone, SMS, email and face-to-face at our rebuilt centre at 13 Upper High Street. Thank you for helping us to help others. That's from Anne Gosling, Treasurer, Winchester Samaritans, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And Geoffrey Bernand writes, glass half empty. Sir, Stephen Percy does not need to be incensed by the current state of affairs. Letters, June the 9th. Perhaps I could shed some light on his concerns. Once they have got all their ducks in a row, we should be back to square one, as he must know that the end justifies the means. At the end of the day, not everyone has time on their hands, and money does not grow on trees. I would therefore urge him to wait for the dust to settle and see the glass as half empty. We will all then be singing from the same hymn sheet. Geoffrey Bernand, Lower Chilland Lane, Martyr Worthy.
And here is a letter about a school celebrating its new extension. I don't know where the school is, it doesn't mention it, but at any rate, retired Major Ron Cassidy, MBE, writes the letter. Sir, the head teacher, Nicky Osborne's ambitions since 2000 have reached fruition, with a new extension to join the existing two buildings and to provide two new classrooms, offices, and a modern entrance. The grand opening was enhanced by the attendance of the Bishop of Winchester, who blessed the new building. The Mayor, Steve Bryan, MP, Peter Edgar, Brymore contractors, county architects, designers, governors, PTA, and other dignitaries. The happy occasion included speeches by the head, the chair of governors, the chair of the PTA, six pupils, and a former pupil, Miss McLaughlin, who is a newly qualified teacher at the school. Biscuits made by the pupils, a special cake and refreshments were enjoyed by everyone. Pupils, as tour guides, proudly showed off the building. Three evenings during the following week also saw pupils giving members of the community and special visitor tours around their great new school. So writes Major Retired Ron Cassidy, MBE, Fifields Road, Winchester, and this is accompanied by a colourful photograph showing Michael Scrivener on keyboard and Janet Ellison, the assistant head, with children singing One More Step, and they all look so happy, very smart, in their red jumpers, and the girls are in red check gingham dresses, and everyone looks very proud of their new school.
Thank you, Margot. Here endeth the letters. That was a really mammoth session, and those of you who don't actually see the Hampshire Chronicle might not know that the letters pages now occupy two full pages, whereas up until recently it's only been one page. So it's obviously a popular thing, and if you've got an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on as well. You can ring them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you could email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We come to the Hampshire Chronicle comment, which this week is about reclaiming the streets for our children. John, please.
Yes, this is the editorial comment, and it's about Play Street. I'll read this in just a moment, but just to remind you that this was part of a headline story that Margot read at the beginning of this recording. What a great idea, Play Street. An idea to reclaim the streets from the power, some would say, the tyranny of the car. St. Catherine's Road in Highcliffe is leading the way, the first in Hampshire. Every month, a road closure is put in place on a Friday, and the children come out to play safely for an hour or so. There are so many benefits, too many to list here. Obviously, it's great for children, improving their health, nurturing freedom and independence, as well as practical skills and tackling obesity. But for the community as a whole, it's a way of making connections, extending friendships, building a sense of community, and simply making it a nicer place to live. It shows that people are more important than cars, always a topic of conversation in Winchester. The beauty of Play Street is that it's residents-led. It would be amazing if the idea was not copied in other parts of the city and district. If Highcliffe, why not Winnell, Week, Stanmore, Badger Farm, Hyde, Hairstock and Full Flood, Kingsworthy, Allsford and Bishop's Waltham? Many congratulations to Helen Fisher for starting it, and credit where credit is due to officers at the City Council for supporting it when they could easily have said no.
Thank you, John. Now, Joanna Lewis's column concerns a subject which we really haven't heard enough of recently. I'm talking, of course, about the European Union. Andrew, please.
Yes, perhaps a little tongue-in-cheek article. It's called Stuck in the Middle with EU. Or maybe it should be Stuck in the Middle with You. Babylon burning, Babylon's burning with anxiety. This was one of the many punk rock classics which an audience were treated to last week at a retro concert in the Discovery Centre. Hip operations, depression and bankruptcy had left their mark on the front men of legendary groups such as Stiff Little Fingers. I'd been sceptical, expecting to hear the sound of the male menopause, a kind of elongated wail that might be a cross between the cry of Daniel O'Donnell falling off a roof and an Apache Indian after being winded in his little bighorn. And yes, a seated acoustic guitar set, playing to a sitting and largely middle-aged audience, were far removed from the spitting, snarling mosh pits of the late 70s. But the voices, passion and talent were impressively undiminished. The hopeless frustration and doomed recklessness of the poetics behind songs like You'll Never Take Me Alive poignantly evoked that eruption of violent anarchy born of disaffection, despair and poverty. Maybe because my world at the time of punk was dominated by Pony Club and Donny Osmond's Teeth, I couldn't help seeing a worrying parallel with the anger, aggression and disdain the EU referendum has unleashed. Slightly comedic altercations at political rallies, as we saw in Winchester, yielded to the appalling, brutal murder of much-respected MP Joe Cox. In the build-up to Thursday's voting, we witnessed an unedifying but perhaps not altogether unsurprising spread of what might be termed, without sounding alarmist, political and civil discursive violence as either side of the debate failed to win their case decisively through regional debate and calm argument. Nevertheless, if you believe the stakes are so high that you are fighting for the soul of your country or for the top job, then exchanges will inevitably become heated, especially when where there have been consistently no clear answers nor definitive predictions from the experts. Take the views of fellow historians. One camp passionately argued that the weight of history places Britain at the heart of Europe, keeping the peace and putting the brakes on further political union, that Britain can be the force for good and only able to have great power, influence, or something proximate to it, if Britain remains. Others argued that Britain has a separate history from continental Europe, with more global links, that the threats European countries face are now so shared that cooperation is a given, not needing an undemocratic, unaccountable superstate. What is clear is that whichever side wins, we need a post-election period of reconciliation to prevent alarmist knee-jerk reactions from the losers, aimed not just at calming people down after a bitter contest with apocalyptic visions. A policy task force should be set up to act on the burning issues of how we are governed, by whom and for what. Rather than feeling despondent and fearful, we should take heart from the way the ill-tempered debate has thrown up a great opportunity to do this. Then we can get back to discussing the other main issue of our times. Did Martin McCutcheon really throw up in Mick Hucknall's hair? There's also been no doubt that mainstream concerns about high levels of migration is not xenophobic nor racist. Rather, it stems from the lived experience many ordinary, hard-working people have of a crippled NHS, overcrowded schools, and overstretched policing. It's perfectly reasonable to ask politicians to better prevent benefit tourists, criminal gangs, and those who want to destroy our way of life from slipping into Britain. Have we, the political elite, the challenge... Sorry. Slight mistake here in the writing. Are we, the political elite, up to the challenge after what we've seen? Many have found themselves singing another song from the 1970s. Clowns to my left, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Very good. Well done, Andrew. Very good column. Now, we go on to Belgarum, who, as you know, probably gives us an alternative view of the news. And just for change, I'm going to read the first item because it concerns two things that are very dear to my heart. The Chiswell Theatre's next open-air production of Robin Hood and Real Ale. It's headed Saxon Bronzes All Round. When Robin Hood and his merry men come to Winchester next month, they will be delighted to find plentiful supplies of their favourite ale, Saxon Bronze. Legend has it that Robin was descended from a long-established Saxon family who kept to their lands after the Norman invasion. Saxon bronze is made by Alfred's Brewery in Winnell, founded by husband and wife Steve and Isabel Haig in 2012. The Cheswell Theatre's production of Robin Hood is in rehearsal for their performances in the garden of Wolvesley Palace on July the 12th to the 16th. Steve and Isabel, members of the Cheswell, met when they appeared in the same play, A Man for All Seasons, in April 1999. Steve had been recruited in 1996 to appear as one of the non-speaking troupe in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. A year later, he was cast as Romeo, for which he had to learn hundreds of lines and sword fighting. Many other roles followed for them both, only appearing together once more on the stage in Allo Allo in 2004. They were married in 2004 with tiny models of their Man for All Seasons characters on the top of their wedding cake. They were actively involved with the Cheswell until the arrival of our children, Amelia and Ellis, said Isabel. Setting up the brewery with a couple of young children in tow took much time and energy. We were thrilled when Cheswell Theatre Bar became one of our first customers. Now that the children are older and the brewery well established, Isabel is able to get back on stage, playing the scheming wife of Gilbert with the White Hand. And just as an aside, yours truly plays Gilbert with the White Hand. Don't ask. When Robin quaffs his ale in performance, it has to be apple juice. But they are sure to enjoy the real Saxon bronze. Margaret, could you next Belgarum item, please? Which is that one there. Yes, thank you.
Foam Knights are in the frame. Organisers of the Barton Stacey Fete have shown off the final designs of their Foam Knights. The 19 knights, made of Cellotex insulation boards, have been decorated by a number of the village's groups and schools. They were created for the Barton Stacey Fete and the 775 Festival from an idea by Stuart Rippon. He took them around the town and photographed them in different locations. Speaking about the photographs, Stuart said, "They took up a whole van. We shepherded them around to get some great images." They will be on show in the History Tent at the event on July the 2nd. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of the Barton Stacey Knights, newly painted, and they look very convincing. They've got their helmets with their nose guard coming down their face, and they're holding their shields and staves. In fact, one has even got a sweeps brush there. Others have got shields with various slogans on them, and they all look very colourful and smart. I think we should go and see them.
Thank you, Margot. John, we're going to read some sport now. Two sports items. Read the first one, please.
Yes, this is 250 pupils take to pool for gala day. Some 250 Winchester schoolchildren from 26 schools showed their talent and enthusiasm for swimming at the 16th Annual Primary School Swimming Gala. Organised by Winchester City Penguins Swimming, the gala gives pupils the chance to come together and enjoy a morning of relay races in a competitive swimming environment. Awards at River Park Leisure Centre were presented by the Mayor, Jane Rutter. Charlie Danby of Sherburne House came first in the Year 4 boys' race, with Ben Nichols, Bishop's Waltham in second, and All Saints Benedict Witt in third. Risa N. Taylor, completed the Year 4 double for Sherburne House by winning the girls' race, whilst Isabella Bruce of St Swithin's and Alice W. St Peter's came in second and third, respectively. St Bede stormed to first in the boys' freestyle relays, with Bishop's Waltham in second and Sherburne House in third. In a very tight final, St Swithin's juniors scooped first in the girls' freestyle relays, with Sherburn House taking second and Otterbourne third. St Bede were victorious in the boys' mixed stroke relays. In second was Bishop Waltham and third Twyford. In the girls' mixed stroke relays, St Swithin's took home the trophy, with Otterbourne in second and Sherburn House coming third. Scantabout won the boys' invitational relay, with South Wanston second and Otterbourne coming in a close third. The girls' invitational relay saw St Faith's take first place, St Bede second and Week in third. The event was sponsored by Winchester University, Hendy Ford, Winchester Connect and Christie's Hospital Foundation. And judging from the photograph which accompanies this article, they were having a terrific time. There are all these 250 children cheering and screaming and waving their arms in lovely matching blue T-shirts.
OK, this is one article that's very pleased to get, as I'm a keen motorcyclist. And this is called Thousands on Hillside to Watch Racing. Matterley Basin was the setting for the latest round of the World Motocross Championship last weekend. Thousands of spectators watched on the hillsides for 2 days of professional racing. Following qualification on Saturday, hopes were running high among the home crowd as Winchester-born Max Anstey secured pole position in the MX2 class. However, it was 16-year-old British starlet Conrad Muse who stole the show in race one, who ended up in a career-best fifth place. Anstey finished fifth overall after the two races, with Muse ninth. In the MXGP class, Tommy Searle was top Briton, finishing 11th in a rain-soaked day of racing. The annual event is held at the same estate as music festival Boomtown Fair. Owner of the estate, Peveril Bruce, recently won planning permission for the music and MX events. Winchester City Council's licensing committee allowed the festival to expand to a 60,000 capacity in time for the event. And the photograph accompanying this is taken from the hillside with the crowd down below and the motorcycle in the air, which looks as though the motorcycle is actually jumping over the heads of about 300 in the crowd. And there's a snack wagon in the background with smokehouse written across it, and a picture of some nice meat and burgers, which is making me very hungry at the moment.
Thank you. Right, we now go on to historical items, and Margot, could you read the item from 25 years ago, please?
June the 21st, 1991. Special needs. Hampshire Education Committee has agreed a major policy document on the county's approach to children who have special educational needs. The agreement came on Tuesday and was unanimous, after 23 people had spoken in a debate that lasted almost 3 hours. The policy comprises 31 objectives and 6 recommendations. The report by the County Education Officer, Mr. Peter Coles, signalled a strong commitment by councillors who went to see how children with special educational needs are taught, and also had a seminar on the subject. Teachers had said it was the first time that councillors had come to see how they worked with children. And there's a second article, Threat to Regiment. The Royal Hampshire Regiment is under threat in the army manpower cuts which the government is planning, Brigadier Bob Long, Colonel of the Regiment, has said. As a single battalion county regiment, we are vulnerable, he told the 41st post-war reunion dinner of the Comrades Association at the Guildhall, Winchester, on Saturday. He added that another factor was that they were one of the very few unamalgamated battalions. Colonel Long reminded his guest that the infantry, now 55 battalions strong, is to reduce to 36 battalions. That was a loss of 35%.
I have two pieces from 50 years ago, June the 23rd, 1966. The first piece is headed Fluoride Dropped. The idea of putting fluoride in school milk has been dropped by the Hampshire County Council's Health Committee because the Ministry of Health is unlikely to allow it. When the idea was first mooted at a recent county council meeting by Mr. E. W. Borrow, Purbrook, Waterlooville and Cowplain, the Health Committee were asked to look into it. After considering the practical difficulties of adding fluoride to milk, either at the dairies or in the schools, and after being advised of the likely attitude of the Ministry of Health and the Department of Education and Science, they decided the idea was impracticable. The second piece I have is entitled Heroes Hailed. Four Winchester men who dragged a motorcyclist from a burning car and then helped a man whose clothes were blazing after an accident in Stockbridge Road, Winchester, were presented with certificates from the Society for the Protection of Life from Fire at Hampshire Quarter Sessions on Monday. They were Mr. George Williams of Stewart Crescent, Winchester, Mr. George Green of the Full Flood Garage, Stockbridge Road, Winchester, Mr. Robert Frederick Chalker of Fifield Road, Winchester, and Mr. John Bernard Hennin of Westman Road, Week.
And 100 years ago, on Saturday, June the 24th, 1916, two articles, unsurprisingly, focused on the Great War. The first one, Huns Repulsed. A telegraphic dispatch dated Thursday, 10:45 p.m. from the British headquarters in France says, "Early this morning, the enemy exploded an exceptionally large mine in the neighbourhood of Givenchy, just north of the La Bassée Canal. The explosion was followed by a hostile bombardment of our trenches, under cover of which the enemy entered our trenches on a narrow front. Troops of the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, however, immediately delivered a very gallant and successful counter-attack, inflicting heavy losses on the enemy and driving him completely out of our position." And the second one is Jutland Thanks. "His Majesty has taken the first opportunity of congratulating the men and officers of the Royal Navy after their recent engagement with the German forces. His Majesty addressed representatives of units on parade in the following terms. You have waited for nearly 2 years with most exemplary patience for the opportunity of meeting and engaging the enemy's fleet. I can well understand how great must have been the relief when you knew on May the 31st that the enemy had been sighted. Unfavourable weather conditions and approaching darkness prevented that complete result which you all expected, but you did all that was possible."
200 years ago was a Monday, June the 24th, 1816, and the first item is headed Forger Hunted. "On Thursday evening last, a search being made for the apprehension of a man who had eloped from his family in Exeter, and who, it was supposed, had secreted himself in Preston Street in that city. Two of the constables got into the same when they perceived a strange man in the act of jumping out of the window. On looking around, a quantity of loose papers were discovered, burning in the fire, parts of which were rescued, and which proved to be forged £1 local banknotes of five different banks. The man evaded the activity of the officer, who was in pursuit of him, and deceived those persons he met by continually crying, 'Fire!'" The second item is headed Waterloo Dinner. "The dinner given in celebration of the anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo at Windsor on Tuesday to the Royal Horse Guards and those of the soldiers of the 1st Regiment of Foot Guards who fought in that glorious battle consisted of an abundance of hams, veal, roast and boiled beef, salads, pies and plum puddings. Exactly 1,000 men partook of it, each of whom was allowed 2 quarts of porter and a pint of wine. There was also a most sumptuous entertainment given at the infantry barracks on the same occasion. After the dessert was served up, the ladies of Windsor and of the officers were admitted into the room, and the Duke of York shook hands with them. Well, we now take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. 1st to the 3rd of July, it's the Hat Fair, fun and events throughout the city. 1st to the 9th of July is Winchester Festival of Arts, and that features a whole host of things. We've got Brahms' Requiem from the Wainfleet Singers and the English Chamber Orchestra, Winchester Music Club, work by Finzi, Howells and Foray, Hampshire Youth Orchestra and Winchester Primary Schools, Britain's Noise Flute, Shakespeare's Venus and Adonis, lunchtime organ recitals and talks by, amongst others, Sandy Toksvig, Vince Cable, Esther Ranson, Robert Hardy and Michael Mopurgo. For details of that, you can get by ringing 01962 857 276. That's 01962 857 276. On Friday the 8th of July to Sunday the 10th of July at Winchester Cathedral, there's the Stonemasons Festival, where stonemasons from around the country will gather to show their skills, and some of the things that they carve will also be on sale. Sunday the 10th of July in St John's Rooms at 7:30 in the evening, there's a quiz night in aid of the RNIB charity. The cost will be £10 to include drink and a raffle ticket. There are lots of gardens open to the public, organised by the National Gardens Scheme. Full details on www.ngs.org.uk. At the Mayflower Theatre, from the 29th of June to the 2nd of July, there's that well-known favourite, the Mikado. And finally, a show very dear to the heart of one of our readers today, Andrew Smith, is in the Rayards production of The Secret Garden, which you might just be able to catch on Saturday the 25th of June, assuming that you get your memory sticks in time. Though I understand, Andrew, that there may be a reserved performance on Sunday the 26th in case of bad weather.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent, thank you. Right, well, we now move on to... we've got the excitement of the lighting up time, which I nearly forgot. Saturday the 25th of June, the sun will rise at 4:52 a.m. and set at 9:24 p.m. And on Wednesday the 30th of June, the times, well, they're virtually identical. So on to items of general news, and Margot, could you start us off, please?
Well, something to whet your appetite a bit. The festival to tease the taste buds. Lainston House Hotel near Winchester has announced that interior designer and TV presenter Linda Barker will open its inaugural Family Food Festival next month. The event in the hotel grounds on Sunday, July the 17th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. will raise money for Help for Heroes. The public is invited to celebrate and sample some of the finest local produce whilst enjoying a range of entertainment, including cooking demos from the hotel's on-site cookery school called Season, led by the head chef, Ollie Rouse. Miss Barker said, "I'm delighted to be opening the Family Food Festival at Lainston House. It will be a fantastic, fun event in support of an extremely worthwhile cause." Winchester's Military Wives Choir will be performing. Guests can enjoy a drink from the Tattinger Champagne Bar, the Upham's Brewery Bar, or the Pim's Tent. With something for all the family, children can take part in a treasure hunt around the grounds, whilst the resident falconer will display the hotel's birds of prey. The festival will host local suppliers, including Winchester Distillery, A&M Johnson Honey and Hive, Hill Farm Juice, Parsonage Farm Charcuterie, Broughton Water Buffalo, Naked Jam, and many more. I wonder what that is. Proving that Hampshire is fast becoming the food capital of England. Gaius Wincall, hotel manager, said, "Here at Lainston House, we are delighted to bring Hampshire's finest food local producers and suppliers together at our Family Food Festival. It's a great opportunity to experience some of the best food and entertainment on offer locally, and we're looking forward to welcoming guests to a great event. And this is accompanied by a very glamorous picture of Linda Barker, the guest of honour at Food Festival.
Fundraising skydive to thank Unit for Care. It was a leap of faith to raise money to help those suffering from mental health issues. After successful treatment for bipolar disorder at Winchester's Lee House, Lucy Balfe thanked staff and raised awareness by taking part in a skydive. The 18-year-old from Southsea raised more than £400 as part of Celebrating Mental Health Awareness Week. Lee House's modern matron Carol Fry and activity coordinator Susie Batty attended the jump site to offer support and watch her impressive feat, which will fund future activities and uplifting trips out for the adolescent psychiatric unit's inpatients. Lee House is an acute adolescent psychiatric service providing inpatient care for people aged between 12 and 18. The purpose-built hospital provides a comprehensive treatment program for young people suffering depression, eating and psychotic disorders. Lucy said, "I wanted to do my skydive to try and raise as much money as I possibly could, to try to thank Lee House for all they've done for me. My time at Lee House was life-changing. All the team, from the nurses to the psychologists to the teachers, were absolutely amazing. I was given support in every possible way. The atmosphere in Lee House is like no other. Whilst young people like myself are admitted for treatment, Lee House gives us more than that. It feels as though you've developed a whole new family of genuine, like-minded others. After years of help from children and adolescent mental health services, Lee House could finally give me the diagnosis I'd been hoping for." And there's an amazing photograph here of Lucy Balfe strapped to a chap who obviously is a professional skydiving fellow. It looks like miles up in the sky. It's absolutely terrifying.
And this article is called Flood Protection Scheme Launched. There's a photo in the middle with, I can only describe as two students, I think, from the Winchester School of Art in a swimming pool type of dinghy paddling around outside. Yeah, that was from 2014. So the article. Winchester is set to be better protected from flooding with the launch of a new scheme. Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, approved the start of the tendering process for the joint £895,000 scheme last Thursday. It is part funded by the County Council, £250,000, City Council, £290,000, Southampton University, £60,000, and the Environment Agency, £295,000. The work will build a low wall that should stop the type of flooding that swamped the River Park area in 2000-2001 and 2013-14. The first flood saw St Bede Primary School relocate to Berwick Avenue for 2 years. When the children returned, the school had been raised several feet to minimise the risk of a repeat. Councillor Perry, speaking on the decision day, said, "This is a good example of a joined-up approach by partners to help protect Winchester residents. The scheme will provide much-needed relief and peace of mind in the St Bede's and River Park areas of Winchester, which saw the River Itchen flood in 2000-2001 and in 2013-2014 after prolonged periods of heavy rainfall. In addition to this scheme, we are also working closely in partnership with the Environment Agency and other local authorities to develop flood mitigation and alleviation schemes to protect communities in Romsey, the Buckskin area of Basingstoke, Bourne Valley and Farringdon after the winter of 2013-14, when Hampshire experienced the most significant rainfall for 250 years. In Winchester, a low wall with deployable flood barriers at openings will be built around North Walls Park Avenue, including St Bede School, the School of Art, homes and businesses. The wall will be constructed in a red brick to match existing municipal walls and will blend into the street scene, similar to the recently constructed flood defence wall in Water Lane. However, the core and foundation of the new wall will be reinforced concrete capable of resisting the calculated water pressures. Gaps for pedestrian and vehicle access will be filled with temporary floodgates when the area is at risk of flooding. The scheme received positive feedback during a public consultation in 2015. Minor concerns about replanting of trees were addressed by explaining that there will be appropriate replanting after the works. The flood defence project will go out to tender in the very near future, with work planned to start in the summer and finish at the end of the year. It is anticipated that there will be minimal disruption from the works, although some footpath diversions may be required. The flooding in 2014 would have been worse, but for the deliberate flooding of farmland north of the city, which eased the pressure downstream.
The council hunt for fly tippers. The dumping of rubbish near Twyford is being investigated by Winchester City Council. The trash was left on a bridleway near Twyford Waterworks off Hazley Road. Rambler Ray George took a photo of the mess, which included toys, bikes, garden hoses, corrugated iron and a car seat. A City Council spokesman confirmed a report of fly tipping had been received and was under investigation. Many people fear that the problem could be worsened if the County Council proceed with plans to cut the number of recycling centres across the county. The tip at Alsford is one of several feared to be under threat.
Fun at Top Teddy Bear's Picnic. If you were out in Winchester on Sunday, you might have been sure of a big surprise. More than 150 people gathered in Abbey Gardens for a teddy bear's picnic on Sunday. Families enjoyed the day, which included face painting, a bouncy castle and dressing up, and having pictures with Golden Bear and the Mayor of Winchester councillor Jane Rutter. Despite the rainy weather, the event raised £377.36, which will go to the Mayor of Winchester's chosen charities, Combat Stress, Home Start, Music for All, Street Reach and Winchester Youth Counselling. The Mayor's Bear, Louise the 14th, was given a new nickname, which will be Ginger, suggested by 3-year-old Eliza Radcliffe. And there is a photograph accompanying this of the mayor, Jane Rutter, with her bear, now called Ginger. I don't know whether the photograph was taken when it was still called Louise the 14th or after it was renamed Ginger. It doesn't make that clear. But the interesting thing is that the bear has replica clothing exactly like the mayor's.
Oh.
So it's from Teddy Bear Picnics to Cafe. New owner for cafe at Barracks. A Winchester company has taken over the cafe in Peninsula Barracks in Winchester. The Little Kitchen Company has opened the Little Kitchen Cafe in the former Peninsula Cafe on Romsey Road. It specialises in soups, sandwiches and deli-style snacks with a variety of cakes and treats. The company was founded in 2011 by Winchester resident Kate Sallinson. The mum of three also owns the Little Kitchen Bistro in Headbourne Worthy. Ms. Sallinson said, "We are thrilled to have the opportunity to showcase our food in such a historic and beautiful location. Following the success of the bistro, we felt our values of producing fresh, delicious, locally sourced fare would be perfect in a more urban environment." She added, "The menu has been carefully crafted to reflect the needs of city visitors. Those wanting a quick lunch out from work, or coffee, cake and a chat, in a friendly, welcoming and informal environment." The company has grown from a one-woman band serving at dinner parties to a flourishing business catering for weddings, christenings, parties and corporate functions. They have also created handmade posh picnics for Henley, Ascot, Lords, Wimbledon and the Grange Park Opera.
a record turnout at Family Fun Day. It was the biggest turnout they had ever had. Organisers of the third Kingsworthy Family Fun Day said they couldn't believe so many people had attended the event. Hundreds of visitors took part in different activities, including face painting, football challenges, and an RAF assault course. Children were thrilled to find not just one, but two bouncy castles and an inflatable slide. There was also a barbecue manned by the local scout group. Special guests in attendance included the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, and MP for Winchester, Steve Brine. The day that was held to raise money for Kingsworthy Preschool. Joe Parker, manager of the charity-run school, said, "It was a really great day, and everyone enjoyed themselves. All the stalls were aimed at the children, so parents didn't have to spend a fortune. We wanted to make it a great day that was as cheap as possible. The cash will also go down to funding the school's annual trip to Finkley Down Farm." Joe added, "The trip has always been special because it is the first time some of our children have visited a farm. Some have never been on a coach before either, and this jazz just adds to the enjoyment and the excitement." A date for next year's event has yet to be decided, and this is accompanied by photographs of happy, smiling children and families with their parents enjoying great fun, painting, face painting, and all sorts of other things, tattooing, and doing all sorts of daring things for them.
Store closure. A popular retail chain has closed one of its stores in Winchester. Argos has shut its Winnell branch, which was located in home base on Eastern Lane, last Sunday. The firm sells everything from dining tables to dishwashers. However, a spokesman did not give a reason for the closure. He said, "After a period of consultation, store colleagues have been provided with alternative employment in neighbouring Argos stores, and a smooth transition has been achieved." The spokesman added that they have no plans to close the city's other store in the Brooks shopping centre. The Brooks was hit recently by the announcement that Beale's department store shuts in August.
Vigil for Somme. Villagers will hold a candlelit vigil on the eve of the 100th anniversary of the Battle of the Somme next week. Residents in Sutton Scotney will gather at the village war memorial at 9 p.m. for an hour on Thursday, June 30th. The infamous battle started on July the 1st and finished on November the 18th that year. Among the units that went over the top on the first day was the Hampshire Regiment. They advanced at 7:30 a.m. and by the end of the day, 26 officers and 559 men were killed, wounded or missing. In total, there were 60,000 British casualties, including 19,000 dead on July the 1st. Members of the Sutton Scotney and District Branch of the Royal British Legion will attend, with standards on parade, and all members of the local community are welcome. The chairman of Wanston Parish Council, Lucy Dowson, has agreed to light the candle at the start of the ceremony.
Gang admits robbery. Three men accused of an armed robbery at a Winchester jeweller's will be sentenced on July the 29th. David George, Domingo Nsita and Joshua Tilloy admitted the raid in Winchester just as the Chronicle went to press yesterday. They targeted Justice in Parchment Street on April the 15th, stealing more than £200,000 worth of watches and jewellery. They also put an imitation firearm to the head of the store's owner, John Quayle. The incident brought the city centre to a standstill as police cordoned off Parchment Street and St George's Street. Two men were arrested within an hour, and one of the men was also arrested in the Parchment Street outside Bell Fine Art. The men previously pleaded guilty of one count of robbery. Appearing at Winchester Crown Court, George, aged 21, and Nsita, 28, and Joshua Tilloy, 22, admitted a second count of possessing an imitation firearm with intent to cause fear of violence. Mr. Recorder Llewellyn Selick adjourned for pre-sentence reports and remanded the trio in custody.
Grass delays. Winchester City Council has admitted that grass cutting in the area is behind schedule. The council says that the monthly amenity grass cutting programme for the Winchester District and East Hampshire District is 6 to 8 days behind. A notice on the council's website stated, "We are working with our contractor to put a catch-up plan in place, and this plan includes weekend and evening working." They added, "The contacts monitoring team will work with the contractor to bring the work up to speed."
New home for WI. The new headquarters of Hampshire WI has opened in Eastleigh. Maureen Levinson, county chairman, welcomed the Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson to cut the ribbon and officially open the Hampshire Federation's new home at Station Hill. It replaces the old base in Hyde Abbey Road in Winchester. Toasts were proposed and speeches made by both the Lord Lieutenant and Eastleigh MP Mims Davies, who has the distinction of being Eastleigh's first female MP. With 200 WIs and over 800 members in Hampshire, new members are always welcome to call 023 8061 6712 for more information, or take a look at the Hampshire website www.hampshirewi.org.uk.
Boris Visid, man quizzed. Police have interviewed a man in connection with an alleged assault at the crowded Boris Johnson EU referendum rally in Winchester. As previously reported, two people were allegedly attacked at the Buttercross during the visit of the Leave campaigner on May the 26th. Police had been investigating claims a Leave campaigner punched a man wearing a gorilla costume and shoved a parish councillor off the monument. A police spokesman said a 34-year-old man has been interviewed under caution in relation to one of the allegations. No formal arrests have been made and inquiries are ongoing.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Smith.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard. Goodbye. Would you please put your memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you very much and goodbye.